So that's a great way to end a review of Joker.
Yeah. Macaulay Culkin wearing weird t-shirts.
You'll find out how we get there if you listen to the whole thing.
Thank you for joining us on the Dorkadia podcast. This is Megan Spur.
Joshua Neal.
And Charles Spur.
Hello. Okay, so Charles, I think you're kind of playing Spock on this one. So Josh and I went and saw the movie Joker.
At the Cinerama on glorious 70mm film, the way God intended.
I don't think any sort of deity has opinions on...
But if God did care... God would want
about
you to
filmography.
See it, would want you to see it at the Cinerama on glorious 70mm film. The way, honestly, though, like that was a treat to be able to see it in 70mm because I'm pretty sure like its heritage of like being kind of an homage to late 70s, early 80s character driven stories. It just worked so well to see it on that like that format.
Well, and that theater too. Which, by the way, for those of you not Seattle natives, is a lovely theater in downtown Seattle. So I want to start off by saying I was hesitant to see Joker. I was pretty sure I was going to hate it because all the kind of the trailers leading up to it. And, you know, honestly, with all of the stories we've been seeing with Harley Quinn and Suicide Squad and the upcoming Birds of Prey and everything, I just was not, we don't need another stupid Joker. You know, and on top of that...
So you didn't like Jared Leto, is what you're saying?
No, I did not. But
you didn't like Joker being reduced to, like, some petty gangster with face tats? No offense to face tats, I have nothing against those. But in this particular portrayal, that was, like, what they were directing him towards.
And also, one of my beefs that I had with it, and I still kind of do, is the fact that it gives Joker a definitive backstory. So, I know. We'll get more into that. Which, by the way, this is going to be... I want to say it's full of spoilers, but quite honestly, if you know the story of... If you know Joker as a character, like, you know where we're at. But I want to say the thing that bothers me about a backstory of Joker is one of the things that Joker is an insane psychopath character who has, you know, gone from story to backstory to backstory to backstory. He has... that's part of... him as being an unknowable force. I don't think he knows his backstory, and he has kind of had this mystery about who he is. That's not what the character is about. You know, Batman is about having the secret identity of Bruce Wayne. That's Joker is not about having a secret identity as being a villain. And so I didn't like the Killing Joke, right? And the idea of kind of giving a backstory and other things that give this almost opportunity to say all it takes is one bad day. And I don't like that story. And you know, other people may, but I never have. So I was really hesitant to see this because I don't necessarily feel like the Joker as a force of a character needs to have a backstory. And I don't really like shoving one into it when it's unnecessary. So those are the
that was two, your concern going in.
Those are my two biggest concerns.
And how did you feel having seen it?
I didn't hate it. I don't know if I loved it as much as you did.
Yeah, no,
but
I don't expect you
there
to.
There are parts of it that I absolutely loved.
There's different aspects of it, too, and you're
and
describing...
I feel like I need to chew on it afterwards. Still feel like I kind of need to
that's the
it
nature
over.
Of that film. And for me, there's different aspects to it. You're describing one aspect. So, I mean, all of you who listen to this podcast probably know Megan's love for the Batverse, et cetera. And so this is a critique for me that it lands on my ears, like... How can we portray something to this character that is in this domain, given that the most truest depiction of this character will not include that backstory?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's a reasonable question. I think that as a director, Todd Phillips basically tackles that by... and you can have this critique, I think. Or I think it's reasonable to have this critique from where I'm sitting, which is essentially he gives himself an easy out on it. In that the movie is so closely focused in from Joker's perspective that it gives him the out of, well, you don't know if anything he just told you was true.
Yeah.
Which feels like a pass, but also does stay true to that lore, which you have to sit with as the audience member if you see it and decide whether that's sufficient for you.
Yeah, and well, that's absolutely your decision.
I think that sounds like it follows with Joker is an unreliable narrator.
Like, that's exactly what they put into it as the intent. And it, and I mean, I guess we said this is spoilers. So they demonstrate in the film that what you were seeing may or may not be true at any given point.
Yeah.
There's moments where I certainly, my opinion is the moment when he walks up to Bruce and puts his fingers in his mouth and forces a smile onto Bruce's face, I was like, Bruce is not letting that happen.
No kid like, is going to let you do that.
This child is not letting dirty, filthy fingers of a mentally ill person they just saw put fingers in their mouth. It's so disturbing. So there's different analysis of this, which I think needs to be done because the film is so multifaceted and there's different things about it, which is what's the continuity, what's the value of telling a, I mean, and I think that's a good question. What's the value of telling an origin story of a character who, I mean, what, for me, and maybe this can be a discussion to you too, for me, Joker's actual superpower is chaos and charisma.
Absolutely.
And those two things have been boiled down to not having some kind of tidy origin. So that's where I'm like, yeah, I can agree with somebody who's a really enthusiastic Batman fan who says, this character represents chaos and charisma and desiring to see the pain inside and the madness inside him reflected in the outside world. And that is what brings him joy, and he does not come from any kind of origin. He just exists in that, and nothing you hear from him is reliable. Therefore, why do we want a origin story of this person who should not have one? And to that, I think Todd Phillips and the writers of this did give themselves a way to be in that space without making it definitive. And you can say that's what you think of that is then your opinion, I would say. Yeah.
When I look at Joker, like, he exists in the Batverse, right, to be the antithesis of Batman. Like,
that's right.
Batman has to put on his true face. Like, Batman doesn't normally, as Bruce Wayne, he exists as the mask, and he puts on his true self. Joker is always his true self. Bruce is very cerebral and fights for
order and justice, yes, and the system
logical, has
and
a code.
Keep it together, right?
And Joker is impulsive. He just follows the whim he has at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the other part of that is that we have the reason for Batman. Like, we know why Bruce became Batman. We understand that. And so not having that is just part of Joker.
In the chaos, it illuminates.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just to be the opposite to Batman.
So
that's really interesting. Yeah. So, like, Batman has this clear, delineated, parents die, traumatized, wants to impose order on the world, believes in the system, wants to enforce that, wants to do everything possible to stop pain and make the world unified and orderly. And then there's this unoriginated chaos energy that embodies this being that just exists to be the opposite of that, to constantly vex him at the furthest possible extent.
But I see a very yin and yang in these characters because they are both psychotic. There is no way that Bruce Wayne and Batman are sane. I really think there's...
Well, dressing in a bat uniform and beating people within an inch of their life is one indicator that you're not...
Is that your professional opinion? That it's a mental health...
You're not doing so well. You know? Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, you could probably talk it out to some loved ones, mainly your butler, which is the only human that can tolerate you.
Yeah.
Or even, like, knows
you
who
pay
you
him.
Really are. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're both utterly crazy.
But
and
I just want to say, right now, we're talking about how these characters exist in the Batverse, which is almost kind of a side to the point of the film,
well,
which we can get into
more.
Yeah,
we can get into this, but I kind of want to lay some of the groundwork here of, like, my I think some of my concerns, and then...
Do you want a movie that's, like, purist to Batman lore? That's the question you have to ask.
I think it's
and
not
it
so
does,
much that it's purist.
One.
It's that, does it...
What does it mean to give an origin to an unoriginated character who is supposed to embody, like, no real reason for what he's doing? Why give a reason to a person who's supposed to inherently not have a reason? That's Charles's point.
Yeah.
Well, and I think my take on the movie to begin with, having not actually seen it, is that... Like, you've talked about the movie standing on its own merits,
and that's looking at it from a cinema viewpoint, which we are not doing right now. We're just talking Batman.
Right, but that's the thing. They chose to tell this story
as
through
Joker.
The lens of that character and that particular, like, I don't know, personality.
So,
and
Yeah. I think you make a good point. I really do agree. And I think the only provision that they have in that is none of this might be real. Some of it might be, some of it might not be. And it looks at maybe like, okay, we're going to maybe transgress on Batman lore a bit to give him some reason. And yet, in my opinion, at every stage in the movie, Arthur Fleck is implicated in his own misery. He is not an innocent character. You identify with him, but you never at any moment feel that he's a hero. He's cruel. And from the opening scene, there's a moment where he gets, I only heard this from the director commentary, is he gets his sign stolen. He gets bashed in the face. When he's laying on the ground, he reaches for the sign and then he stops. And he's wearing clown costume, and he reaches for the little flower that shoots the water in your face, and he pushes it. And he was like, that's showing you that from day one, he's implicated in his own chaos of his own response, of his own discordant madness that embodies him. And so for me, it was enough to say, we're going to, again, it's the wave of the hand. We're going to transgress some Batman lore. He's not the pure embodiment of absolute untethered chaos. We're going to give him some humanity, but the chaos is present from day one. I mean, he's literally been beat to shit by a bunch of teenagers and robbed while working, and he's reaching to like make his flower go because he's just impulsive, chaotic, whatever. So I think within those parameters, if we were going to have a Joker movie, this for me was the home run. And you could argue, do we need one or not? And that's a different discussion. And maybe I would agree with you, actually. So, I think you make a good point.
I will say that with this backstory, this story that we were told, I actually think now that I've muddled on this for like a week now, I don't know if what we saw was actually the Joker. And that's one of the end possibilities of
that
this.
That is so, one of the end possibilities, that so, this may not be the Joker.
Yeah.
This may be Arthur Fleck.
Yes. And that's, I think that's where I've landed. And you, as the, you know, person who watched it, can be the one to make that decision. I think of it very similar to playing the game Her Story. We talked about this, right? And I guess spoilers for Her Story, which is like 10 years old at this point. Not 10 years.
But, it's been around for a while.
But whether or not you are...
That's on you. Also, we did wait a while on Joker. I mean, honestly, with all of the hullabaloo and everyone talking about it, it's like...
Yeah, it's been a few weeks.
If you see in the title, we're talking Joker, and you click on this, you kind of did that.
Yeah. No, but so we talk about the game Her Story, where you were making the decision of whether or not it is somebody with a disassociative disorder and, you know... a multiple personality, or are there twins? Are right. there identical twins? So
separated at birth that grew up across the street from each other.
Yes. Anyway, so but not so much on that plot line. It's more about the fact that in this game, it is up to you as the player to make the decision of what happened. There is no right or wrong answer. It is just you are served this story, and therefore the game is over when you decide you're done and you've made a decision. I feel like watching Joker, you kind of are left this not just a decision, but you kind of have to mull this story over, because
you're implicated in all of it. You're brought through this thing where you're trying to determine what may be real or what not. And the final scene, I don't even know if I want to ruin it for you, Charles. I honestly am conflicted because I am unabashedly
gushing.
I'm going to
ruin it for him.
Okay. I'm just an unabashed, like, gushing over so many other aspects of it. We're talking about one aspect, which I honestly agree with both of you. Like, it's a reasonable critique of it. If you just move past that and get into the music, the incredible acting is world-class, highest-level acting. I felt inspired as a human just by witnessing. If you look at the cinema style, the way that they built the film, the way it's true to this kind of very simple character-driven story arc, and the reveals and the different things that happen, the twists and turns, the surprises, to me, I will use the word, and it fits for me to call it a masterpiece of cinema, given it can have this critique of somebody who's a very Batman-centric person. But there are so many other aspects to the film.
Yeah.
I will own the soundtrack on vinyl, and I will listen to it regularly. It is incredible.
I think that's the first thing when Charles asked me about the film. I was like, I don't know. I got to think about it, but that soundtrack was amazing.
It's an Icelandic composer, and I think it's a female Icelandic composer, and it's just riveting soundtrack.
The
cello is amazing. And then it's counterbalanced with this chaos of this piano music that's like so tinkly and happy and like upbeat and everything's good. And then this like undertone of the most just
haunting.
Haunting. That's a great word for it. I mean, I kind of want to go see the film again just to listen to the music.
Yeah.
The music in it is incredible.
It is on Spotify now, by the way.
Thank God.
So,
let's not the same as vinyl, but...
No.
I'm a loser who has to be cool. He's my vinyl.
Fucking hipsters.
Yeah.
But, okay, so let's get into some of the cinematography things, because it's also something that was amazing, but
the
also...
The establishing shot of him on the subway going into Gotham and the world building and the CGI they did to make that town, that was just, like, suffocating and overwhelming, and he's, like, entering it in this straight line.
It is...
That shot's incredible.
For anybody who's not familiar with the Batverse, it's very much based on Detroit. As a city, right? And also known for being very dirty and dark and violent. And one of the things that stood out for me at first on this film, which is, you know, it's a beautifully done of something very dark and dirty and violent.
Yeah, it's that... effective. It's effective as a film. And honestly, for me, it's one that I keep chewing on, I keep thinking about, and the way that they bring you into that world. And one of the things that I also was thinking about, Megan, was like, yeah, we don't know how reliable our narrator is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Gotham. So maybe these people are doing this shit. Like, because if you suspend your disbelief and you say, we're in Gotham.
Yes.
Maybe some of this shit is happening.
So, couple things here. It's a very different picture of Gotham than you've ever seen. Because every time you watch any of the cartoons or read the comics about Gotham, it is almost always at night. Because Batman is about Batman. It's about him fighting crime at night as the Caped Crusader.
He is the knight. He's fabulous.
Yeah, he is. but this is very much shot in the daytime. There
That's
is
an interesting
so much
point,
of this
yeah.
is done during the day. And it adds an air of reality to it, in which Batman has never really been based in reality, right? This adds a very real characteristic to it that changes it. And it's no longer in this mystery and hidden in the shadows. This is daytime and raw and dirty. And that it's, again, I think very beautifully done, but it's a very different picture of Gotham.
For me, what I think about that difference is it felt fresh. And this is one of the things that I think was so...
I see fresh as something like clean and pure. I think fresh vegetables off a vine. You see, I have a hard time with that phrase because I think I use it differently than you.
Yeah, you do. I would say this is fresh garbage. Like it's in the sense of it doesn't tread on old Joker ways of... I mean, it is inspired by some of it. And somebody used the word, they're like, oh, what they said, he's not something, but he's not sympathetic as a character. He's actually pitiful. And for me, the difference was he implicates himself in his own suffering over and over and over. There's nobody who's good in this film. And yet there's nobody who's entirely bad. And we can talk about different themes, and I don't want to jump around too much. I want to stay a little bit with stuff. But one of the themes for me that I heard other people talk about that just totally resonated for me was that the movie is fundamentally about misunderstandings, just these constant misunderstandings between Joker and the world. And no one is innocent, and he's becoming more and more deranged and violent and aggressive through these continuing misunderstandings that keep building and building and building. And for me, that is some of the most fundamental thematic element that runs throughout the whole thing, is just this constant stuff. And yet, while you can sympathize with him, it's more just like you're like, oh, that's a bummer that he's going that direction.
Yeah.
like seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, man, murder again.
Well, it's like, but he's, but okay, so again, spoiler. His first murder is in self-defense.
Yeah.
And then he dances like a fucking ballet because he's so happy. And his second and third murder are in cold, calculated blood. And he rejoices, and then he never feels, he feels happier and happier and happier about what he did.
So
you can't really feel sorry for him. He's not struggling with, like, the fact he murdered three people in self-defense. He's happy.
Yeah.
He's rejoicing in it. He is not a good person. He's never portrayed, again, I think pitiful is the word for it. It is not a sympathetic portrayal because he's never innocent. They never let him be innocent. He is always disturbing, and another theme I would say is just tension and just unease. And as you watch it, I never felt comfortable.
No.
You're saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. The entire time. It's the whole thing is just filled with tension and being uncomfortable and just really terse, right? The whole time.
Yes.
There's discord the entire time. And it's designed that way. And I mean, anything with the Joker, I think that is a clear definition. So I want to clarify something that I said before about how I thought that this isn't actually the Joker, not the Joker that we're familiar with. I still believe that the end story of the creation of Batman still happens in this movie. But I don't think I believe that Arthur Fleck is the one that did it. So to give backstory on this, right? You're following this one character.
Wait, more pearls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there, of course there's pearls.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Well, we got pearls, baby.
Yeah, pearls, you got Zorro.
We got Zorro, we got pearls.
Yep.
I mean, so there's different things. I just want to be clear that should be almost delineated as separate things. There's how true is this to a Batman film? Does it need to exist? Okay, that's its own question. Like, what are we talking about Batverse? What are we talking just from the acting perspective, the directing perspective, the world-building perspective, the story itself? Like, all of these are separate entities that deserve, and for me, I just want to say, masterpiece across the board. The one area I'd be like, maybe not, is, did it need to be Batman?
Well, okay, but this is the reason, like, let me get into this a little bit, because, so there is a thing that's happening here. The first shot that happens in self-defense essentially starts the city rioting and everybody using clown masks as a representation of what they are frustrated with. Think how people use V for Vendetta and using those masks, right?
Right, so,
a little more context. I want to stay with this, but this matters. The three people that Joker killed were these depraved, psychopathic, rich schoolboys that were going to Gotham Prep, who were at the same school that Bruce goes to, that Thomas Wayne knew, and they represent essentially if you take our world and you dial up the notch of depravity and you dial down any empathy and love, you get Gotham. And so these one percenters or very like privileged humans are more psychotic and wild and vicious.
Yeah.
And that's who he killed. And so in this world, the response of the other people who are also like poor and in this miserable situation, they see this as striking back against the people that are harming them all the time.
Yeah.
That's what inspires them, and they love and they value, and they start to align with this person who literally, you learn throughout the course of the film, has never been understood his entire life. And that's like the most devastating thing is like, I don't know, we'd have to basically lay out way more, but I'll just pause here and say that's part of the inspiration for the town getting so excited is they see this as justice. Mm-hmm. They see this as striking back at the people that are harming and oppressing and holding them back. They're very rapey. Like, they're harassing a woman on the subway before he kills them. They're like, kind of like swinging through vines and singing this depraved shit as they're like coming over to him on the subway. And then they start beating the hell out of him.
Yeah.
There's
justification for what he did, right? It was self-defense.
The first one.
Yes.
Then he cold-bloodedly hunts down the other two and slaughters them.
He did hunt them down, yes. But, I'm just saying.
You can say the first shot and then when the other two are fleeing and trying to stop him.
Yes, okay. But anyways, what I'm saying is that there's this situation starts the city, starting to protest and riot within the clown gear. And so there's a lot of people wearing the mask that is the paint that you see Joker's face. Now, fast forward through a lot of things in the film, at the very end, there is rioting happening. There is Joker murders a notable character on TV and live broadcast. He gets...
And then shoots his dead body. That was fucked up.
Yeah, so he...
That was honestly the hardest part for me to see, is when he shoots the dead body again through the heart. I was like, oh, God.
It was very unnecessary.
Was very Joker. That was like, okay, now we're dealing with, like, the Joker.
So at the end, he is carried away in a police car, right? He's being hauled off.
Again, his chaos has no plan. He has no... Which, again, that to me felt like dialed in, true to the Joker character.
So here's the thing that stopped me, is that police car gets hit by another car because there's rioting in the streets. There's, you know, everything happening. The policemen are either killed or knocked out. And then two rioters take the Joker out of the back of the car and basically
like
hoist
Jesus
him up.
On the cross.
Yeah, hoist him up on the car, and he's standing there in a very Christ-like pose.
Yeah.
And he's kind of circling around to the cheering of everybody around him. The thing that that I'm struggling with is that in no way did I feel like in this film that the Joker that we saw had that kind of charisma that actually would manifest in a giant crowd, you know, following him. And I also kind of think that there's, I don't know, I feel like there's a so much uncertainty around this character, because multiple times you've been shown what he pictured happened, and then you get flashbacks to realize that those things actually didn't happen. That was his psychotic break, and that was him having hallucinations. So did he actually, Arthur Fleck, first commit that murder? And second, was he actually then seen as this, you know, I don't want to say like Christ-like character,
it's
but
kind
at
of
least,
like it is, though. In that moment, it feels that way.
Then there's also a moment later on where he is at the very end, after all this has happened, and he's in a mental health facility, and he thinks back to what has happened because of all of this. And that's when you see kind of a flashback to the broken pearls and the death of the Waynes, which was not done by him. So it was more of a, you as the watcher found out that it caused the death of the Waynes and essentially the birth of Batman.
So he's no Jack Napier.
So I think that this is what it, the story that we were told is the start of Batman. It is the origin story of Batman.
But is this the Joker?
Is this the Joker? And I actually don't think it is.
Interesting.
I think that,
that's an interesting take.
So you feel like the title was specifically not the Joker?
I think it's Joker. I think, it, I mean, there's a person
it's a Joker. It's a Joker energy, but the Joker is something more different that comes later in this.
Yeah, and I also want to say that
they
you
leave
know,
that open intentionally when, as a potential way to
yeah,
interpret the film.
And when we watched this movie, I had this, my initial response was, if you had changed the city from Gotham to Chicago, and you had changed the name of the Waynes to the Thomases,
and you changed the name from the Joker to the taxi driver,
I mean, it, then all of a sudden,
then somebody's falling down.
But it is, you could have had the exact same film,
yeah,
and never.
But it is an homage to those things, and I think it does work as a Joker film. And I will just push back my own experience. Okay, I'm pretty straight.
Well, no, I'm walking that assessment back, though.
The charisma when he walks down the hall, I'm just telling you, people, I was like, maybe I'm not straight. That was the first moment when he's walking and the cello's playing after he kills the three men in the hall and he's about to go bone his woman. He's walking down the hall and there's just an embodiment of sexual dominant energy that he's exuding as an actor, and the way the music and the way it's shot and the way it's happening, all of that combines to a thing that for me was riveting. And I felt that sitting in my seat. I was like, this is hot. I was like, good grief, what the fuck?
Okay,
and
but I don't think you're wrong in that. I think that
so
that,
for me, that does acknowledge his charisma in the film.
It acknowledges the charisma during a mental, you know, break.
You learn that later. But it does show, like, he has this in him. It's inside him. This music, this charisma, this power is in him. And it does intermittently spark and come out.
So I want to go back, though, to the talking about whether or not this actually had to be the story of Batman, of Chicago versus Gotham and the Thomases versus the Waynes, right? Yeah. So is that I realize one of the things that made this film more interesting is that you know the end point, theoretically. You know that your start, it's supposedly the Joker. So, which means you know that he is a supervillain in the Batman universe. You know
he's
that he's
the
chaos.
Supervillain.
You
he's
know
the
that,
Lex Luthor of this universe.
I mean, one of.
Potentially.
But yes. So
besides actually Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor, who is also
who's also exists in this universe.
But so you know the finish line. And that's actually where I have to walk that assessment back, which is this film would have been incredibly different everything would have been different if you didn't know the finish line when you walked in the door.
Yeah.
So, sure, if you weren't expecting at the end that this character...
The title tells you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, this character's just going to be the baddest of bad eggs by the end of the film.
And so I think that's actually necessary, because I think that would have changed everything. You would have been consistently disappointed in the film if you didn't have that expectation, because you'd just been waiting for... Maybe not a happy ending, but at least something good to happen. Like
a redemption, an explanation, like something that made it reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole movie, like, I mean, the more it reveals, like, for me, if we just talk about, like, the craft of the story and the script that was part of this, it is an A+ in storytelling. There's reveals that happen later that are gut-wrenching and unexpected, even within that kind of a universe. I honestly feel bad giving this one away, Charles, but I have to say it is, for me, the reveal that his entire life, starting with the brain damage he got from being abused and tied to a radiator as a child, he develops a disorder that he laughs when he feels powerful emotion. And his mother, who's a narcissist and psychopath, has been misinterpreting that as him being happy. She even nicknames him Happy. And he says the words, "I've never been happy a single day in my life." And it's because his whole life, she's been interpreting his laughter. And so as this thing, it's just this soul-crushing moment. I was like, oh, God. And then he, like, murders someone in cold blood. And you're like... Oh, and he's bad too. Yeah. And it's these moments of like, he is implicated as, and the word again I'll come back to is pitiful. It's like, it's awful the things that he's been through, and it's awful the reaction he has, it's awful that this world has. And again, I think they take this universe and they just dial up the violence and the viciousness, and they dial down the empathy and care that our world has to put this in contrast. And for me, if I'm just talking storytelling, if I'm just talking the cinematography, and I'm not an expert cinephile, and I was blown away by the shots, the way that it was done, the way that it's true to that kind of storytelling, and Joaquin Phoenix's acting. And if you look at his eyes when you watch it, oh my God, like, you pay attention to the emotion coming out, the embodied way he moves, the voice, the way he laughs, and it's clearly just so soul-wrenching pain. And then also fear and all these other emotions, but they're always a laugh. It's just, it's incredible. And it creates, for me, it creates an incredibly provocative and interesting story. And one of the things I wanted to say that I promised Megan I would get to, sorry, is that it, for me, opened up the door. Maybe other people will probably comment or maybe argue there's others and there might be that I don't know about. But the traditional summer blockbuster as the comic book genre. And it said, what if we go into the comic book world, but we tell a completely different genre of story? For me, that was just exciting in and of itself, and to have been done so well. And I'm like super interested in, like, I would love, and I think I've heard you say this before, Megan, and I agree, and I got this, I'm pretty sure I got it from you, is what if we had a Batman film that was 100% detective work? There was this super interesting, complicated story where, and I mean, I hate to say this, but Batman Forever kind of did this. It's a terrible movie, but it kind of did the whole he's trying to figure out the Riddler. He doesn't really know what's happening.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was like, wait, which terrible?
It was an awful movie.
It was a Bruckheimer film, wasn't it?
It's awful. I don't know, but it does have a kind of thing of like, it tries to say he's a detective. It adds that element. But I mean a serious, like, legit, really interesting, like, when Batman figures this out, he's going to win. Because that's what Batman does. He's going to destroy this person. But it's the finding out and the getting there. I'm excited to see comic book movies do something like this. Hell, we could even have, like, a romance or a comedy. I don't know. Yeah.
Just the world's greatest detective is the part that I like, you know, that I would want. I want that instead of I have infinite money.
So that's exciting to me. That's exciting to me to say, what if it's not just a summer blockbuster action? What if it's just a straight up drama? What if it's a detective movie and it's a mystery?
Yeah.
What if it's a psychological thriller mystery? That would be awesome. So for me, that's one thing I loved about it that we've talked about is, what if this could have been any other movie? And it's like, yeah, it's expanding how we engage with these comic book universes.
Yeah.
So like a Hush movie that's actually well done.
Yeah.
So I'm excited by that. I'm excited to break this new territory. And I hope we see more films that push us in that way, that are like, it happens in this universe. Actually, I was thinking about, I was fantasizing about this. What if we had a movie of just an ordinary motherfucker that just lives in like the Batverse? And he's like, God damn it. Like he's walking around like penguins doing bullshit. Like Mr. Freeze is coming around. He's like, guess I don't have to go to work today. But it's just like a normal Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
Who, and none of the like superheroes play a significant role other than his life is kind of annoying because of this world.
Walk out one day, just see a giant green balloon with a huge smile on it, be like, oh, fuck no. Go back inside.
He's like, guess they're gassing the city again. He just puts on his gas mask and just flips it off.
Turns on the news, yeah.
It got me thinking.
He's just an accountant.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just a miserable goddamn accountant.
I really gotta move to Star City. What the fuck's going on?
He's like, really? Really, Lex? You had to do that?
Yeah.
You built this thing to come kill Superman? I couldn't just... I was going to propose today. Yeah. So for me, that was part of what I really liked about, like, it shows us what's possible in these genres if we're not so, like... And again, maybe people know other ones that did that. I don't know. But like, seriously, it's cool to me to be like, what if it's a romance? What if it's a comedy? What if it's this character-driven, tension-riddled, awful thing? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was cool for me.
Well, and I think with something like that, you had to take that away from the main superheroes, right? Like,
yeah.
You had to diverge from everything the DCEU has been doing. Dear God, that's just a good idea. Diverging from that.
Are we talking Gotham again?
No, not Gotham. Like the cinematic stuff with Batman versus Superman and Justice League.
I'll argue
Aquaman was kind of funny.
I'll argue with you that Wonder Woman was a delight.
Wonder Woman was good.
I like Wonder Woman as well.
Yes.
I'm interested to see what number two.
Taking place in the 80s, is that?
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
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 I hope it's good. We'll see.
Anyways, so I think capping all of the, like, 87 points that we just made on Joker, I highly recommend seeing it. I think I'm still conflicted on it. I think I still need to chew it over a bit because I think that there's things that I still don't know if I really understand what my stance on it, but I think that there are parts of it that are amazing. The music is just stunning. The visuals are amazing. The acting is incredibly well done. It is hard to watch.
It's not an easy film to watch, that's for sure. It's not some delightful little thing. It's incredibly affecting at what it does, and the effect that it has is tension, stress, and uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a date movie, I wouldn't pick this one.
I would. You're gonna get laid after that. You're both gonna be so stressed out, you're gonna be like, let's fuck the pain away.
You have an interesting dating life, Josh.
Boy, anyways.
You're going to want an escape after that one. And each other's body might be the place you find it.
Oh, I'm pivoting so hard. Let's leave this topic.
Wait, let me just say my final thing is it's incredibly provoking. I don't remember the last time I felt like a film had such a cultural impact. And again, maybe this isn't overblowing it, but like The Matrix was the last time I heard people talking about a movie this much. Like this movie is clearly making waves. And for that reason alone, just to be in on the conversation, to find out what you think, what you know. I love the conversations. I've been really riveted by them. The movie churned up so much for me. It's made me think more deeply. It's made me want to be more empathic, more interested in understanding people. One of the final points I can say is Thomas Wayne is depicted in a way that humanizes him. I thought that was amazing. He's not good or bad. He's trying to make a difference, but he's just so tone deaf at times. He's also pissed off that this fucking psycho is still following him around and harassing his child, which makes total sense to me. All of the characters are complicated. I highly recommend, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, I'm sorry for what we've done.
I'm on this show and I haven't seen it.
I know, Charles, I'm sorry. But my point is, I think the cinematography for me, 10, the world building, 10, the script, 10, the acting, 10, the music, 11,
yeah,
is just like amazing. And the critique that I will always agree with and think is like, do you think it needed to be a Batman film? I don't know. for me, that's an exciting new ground to break around what it means to be a superhero movie. I actually, oh my God, this just occurred to me. I would love it if a Superman movie took this kind of psychological perspective of what happens to be the man with this much power. That would be so fascinating to me to have this incredibly character-driven, thoughtful portrayal of Superman.
I can't imagine Kal-El's that deep.
He's such a Boy Scout. Like,
I mean, that's the way
Cyclops
is
more complex.
Yeah, no, character. I don't want a Cyclops movie.
Well, no, let's never do a Cyclops movie.
Let's not. But you don't think that there's much more in there?
No, I think.
I mean,
you're
the kind of resident Superman fan.
Well, I mean, I'm not as big of a Superman fan as others, but
don't they tell darker stories of him? Some points.
There have been
Elseworlds kind of stuff.
Yeah, but even then, like, it's just You know,
he's just the golden retriever superhero.
The water is wide, just not so deep.
That's funny. I think it would be interesting to test, like Lex Luthor's the perfect villain for him, in my opinion, because it's like, with all his power, he still can't be two places at once. And you can put him up against puzzles that challenge him emotionally, mentally, that, like, he has to pick between who do I save. And situations like that, where he's wrought with this difficulty of his power. Oh. I would love that. I think that would be
fascinating. So we have seen stories like that, where he is put in a situation where he made the wrong decision, something happened, and he did something wrong, and now you're suffering the consequences of it. So Injustice was...
Injustice is a good comic series.
It is essentially the start of that. He gets infected with a virus that, because it has kryptonite is, you know, on it, so he was able to be infected. He has he basically killed a pregnant Lois, thinking that it was...
And Joker did that to him, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the tie-in.
Yep. And then he goes essentially off the deep end, and he kills the Joker. And so now you have Batman versus Superman, because he was like, you went too far. He has to go to jail. And he was like, this is his punishment. And he kills him. So now you have a whole storyline of, not only has Superman just now been like, nope, martial law, I'm done with this. Like, clearly, there is no way to reform anyone. Therefore, we go to the extreme. And now you have the
fascism
world pitted against each other.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that storyline finds Superman's breaking point and hits it. The Joker wins. He's dead, but he wins.
That's his point. He only wants chaos. That's what brings him joy. And in fact, that's true to the film, is he has this insane smile when he sees somebody who's wearing his mask. And for the first time, the inner suffering is reflected in the outside world. He wins when suffering and pain is reflected of what he feels inside. It's the one way he can connect, which to me was a fascinating, like, way of portraying him. And I agree, I think it's what he aims for. He aims just to cause the chaos that's inside to be outside.
Well, and then in this story for Injustice, he actually, when he gets asked, like, why did he do it, and he mentioned that he finally wanted to win, because Superman was an easy target. You know, Batman, he's never been able to really win against, but you can win,
like,
against Superman.
Every now and again, you need the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess that's more to your point.
Yeah, it's just... It's interesting.
Maybe someone could. I don't know if it would be too connected to the lore, but it provides a template for exploring new territory.
It's still
I'll say
an interesting
that.
Story. So.
But and it breaks new ground for what it means to be a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Or a supervillain movie. And I'm interested in that. I think that's really exciting. Because as much as I love, like, the 27-plus films I have to watch to see the final of, like, the Marvel, like, universe, it's like, it was hitting the same note a few too many times for me.
Yeah, fair.
Well, I mean, if you don't see Iron Man 3 and then understand that the kid in that movie has grown up because it's been so many years, you won't know who all is at the funeral at the end. And then you'll have to Google it and be like, who the fuck was this person in the background?
Yes.
Oh, I guess I did see Iron Man 3. Huh, I guess it has been a while.
Yes. Anyways, all right, I'm moving on, because
okay,
we've concluded
done. We're done with Joker. I think it's a really fun discussion. I have a lot of fun. And one thing I will say is, see the movie and see what you think. I think it's fun to have the discussion. I think it's one of the most affecting, provocative films that I've seen. It's in definitely my top three films I've ever seen.
Oh, wait, no. You can't say that without actually mentioning your other top
three?
Two. Yes.
Okay. So I don't name these in order. They're all maybe equal. For me, it's The Joker, Mad Max Fury Road, and Home Alone. I love that movie! I'm sorry. I was a child when I saw it.
I've seen Home Alone. I haven't seen any of the other ones.
Only Home Alone. I think I'm the same age as Macaulay Culkin. I think we have a bond because of this. Minus does the cocaine.
I was going to ask if...
Does he know you have a bond?
Oh, he knows.
There's a restraining order.
I've had this child.
Who?
I've given birth to his child.
Macaulay Culkin had a Twitter feud, I think, with somebody, and I'm trying to remember who it was, where they kept wearing t-shirts of each other wearing a t-shirt of somebody's picture on it.
That's funny.
Well, I have no idea, but that's interesting.
That makes sense to me that you
If I can
that.
Find it, it's in the show. I do social media for a living, man. I pick up really random stuff.
So that's a great way to end a review of Joker.
Yeah. Macaulay Culkin wearing weird t-shirts.
You'll find out how we get there if you listen to the whole thing. Play that clip at the beginning and be like, how do we get to this? Listen and find out.
I don't.
And just like Joker, you know the ending before you start.
High five, buddy. Charles, you can't see it, folks, is just hanging his head in shame. And
I don't know if that was shame. That wasn't shame. That was more like resignation of the insanity he's dealing with.
Oh, man.
Anyway,
I feel like I'm not directing or producing my own podcast anymore.
Nope.
It's turned into the Megan and Josh show.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Fair.
Anyway, see the film, have discussions, see what you think. I think either way, whether you see it or not, it's so inundated the conversation now that you're going to hear about it, so might as well see it. All right. Thanks for tuning in this week, folks.
Oof. Had to get that off my chest.
We'll talk about some video games on the next episode.
Yes, we will talk about some video games next episode. There's a couple of good ones. Charles and I have been playing some really interesting games, so happy to get into those.
And also Destiny. Also Destiny.
I'm considering coming back.
Let's talk about that next time on the Dorkadia Podcast.
God. All right. Thanks for tuning in. You can catch us at dorkadia.com, at Dorkadia, most social medias, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, and Mixer. We would love a rating of 5 out of 5. What?
Squirting flowers.
Oh, boy. All right.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.